going to close down the other ones. What do you think of that?
I think it's another pipe dream. They've been telling us all these years and all these lies and all these years, and that's just another lie.
By the end of the legislative session, with ongoing opposition from a broad coalition of environmental groups, the Dodat Desert Rock grandmothers were able to keep the $85 million tax credit tabled, in spite of more than $18,000 in contributions to legislators by Scythe Global lobbyists. The group continues their vigil at Desert Rock and is now working to visit each of 110 chapter houses throughout the Diné Nation to reverse the support for the coal plant in Window Rock. They are looking for broad public support for this monumental effort. You may follow their effort or support them by visiting their website, desert-rock-blog.com. That's desert-rock-blog.com. That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to the story of the grassroots struggle of Dodat Desert Rock, a group of Diné families organized to stop the building of a new coal plant near Shiprock, New Mexico. Our contributors this week are youth reporter Lila Johnston and Robin Collier of Cultural Energy in Taos, New Mexico. Some of this material was first broadcast on KRZA in Alamosa, Colorado, and KVOT in Taos, New Mexico. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. To listen to this and other cultural energy shows, visit culturalenergy.org. I'm Robin Collier in Taos, New Mexico. Thanks for listening, and see you next week on Sprout.
Pisces Moons Productions presents The Exonerated, True Stories from Death Row of Innocence, Injustice, and Redemption, by Jessica Blank and Eric Jensen, running through May 26, 2007, at the Broadway Playhouse, 526 Broadway, Santa Cruz, California. Buy tickets online or by phone, 877-238-5596. That's 238-5596. Or visit PiscesMoon.org.
You've heard the military recruiter's sales pitch. Travel, training, money for college. Sounds pretty good, right? All advertising does. But if military life doesn't live up to the advertising, you can't bring your enlistment agreement back to the recruiter for a refund. You're in for 8 years of your life. You wouldn't buy a car without looking under the hood. Before you enlist, check out the reality of military life. www.objector.org.
Next on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org, it's your old favorite Bathrobes Piers Broadsides with me. I'm Robert Norris. Stay tuned. Interesting stuff from Arcata, California. and Olympia, Washington, on encampments and the continuing struggle to restore and establish basic human rights for poor people who have to live outside.
Going down to mission tonight to get myself a bed, to lay down my bags a while, rest my weary head. There'll be woes to carve, the terrors to peel. But first, you gotta kneel. You gotta hear about Jesus before you get. You got to hear about Jesus before you get to me. Going down to the mission tonight to feel salvation's power. So my two little boys can be saved for a couple of hours. When I hear that golden rule, I feel all my sorrows will be healed, and will Jesus, before we get to me. Doors open at 6 o'clock. I'll be the first in line. Last week I sat and read the Daily News. I've been listening this time. I'm going down to mission tonight to hear that piano play. Oh, yeah. My empty stomach calls to me. Take off your hat and pray. Thou shalt not kill. Oh, thou shalt not steal. And we'll hear about Jesus before we get. Before we get the meat. Oh, yeah.
And that was Loan and Navarro, How Much More. In Harmony with the Homeless is the CD that came off of. And welcome to Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides, 2 hours of investigation of how to restore or perhaps establish a new basic civil rights for poor people outside. A kind of perhaps overly familiar message to those who listen to this show regularly, perhaps a not-so-familiar message to those who just tuned in. And you are tuned, as mentioned before, to 101.1 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Or you, perhaps you're listening to us on the net, where we stream at www.freakradio.org. If you want to become a supporter of Free Radio, or you want a program of your own, or you want to give us a public service announcement, or make a criticism or comment, you can go to the net, www.freakradio.org, or you can give a call to our voicemail, which is 427-4523, area code 831, 427-4523. If you want to call me on the air, you can. It's easy to do. The number is 427-3772, 427-3772, or if you're letter-minded, it's 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. So again, give a call to 427-3772 if you want to talk on the air about some of the things I'm discussing. If you have an update to pass on, if you have an emergency of any sort, hey, this is a community radio station. We're concerned with community issues. I'm particularly, of course, concerned with changing laws that criminalize poor people, empowering people to make the kind of changes that will enable them to survive with some grace, dignity, and health here in Santa Cruz, which is a real problem given our current Santa Cruz City Council, and indeed a problem in many communities which consider themselves, quote, progressive, unquote. We're going to find that out today as I play some interviews I did earlier today with Arcata, California, another progressive community, even more progressive in terms of its external concerns with stopping the Patriot Act and supporting impeachment of Cheney and Bush, or at least starting with Bush, and I guess now there's one on the table about Cheney. A resolution's coming up shortly, hopefully at the City Council, around demanding that we not invade Iran, or let's say Bush not invade Iran, and that Pelosi, our great Democratic Führer in the House, not allow him to invade Iran, or at least say something about it. That particular thing, don't invade Iran, was removed from the Iraqi supplemental resolution, as many folks who listen to this show probably know, and it should be put back in. Anyway, there's a lot of cities that call themselves progressive. Olympia, Washington, very progressive in many respects, in that it's, I think, one of the few cities along with, is one of the few cities that actually stopped or slowed the war machine, the criminal war machine that Bush is operating, Bush and his corporate buddies are operating, and his buddies in the military, to despoil a nation over in the Middle East and, I don't know, murder another 100 or 2,000 before too long, on top of the 700 or 800,000 that have already died in Iraq as a direct consequence of our invasion, not to mention the million that died from the sanctions before that. Olympia is a city that stopped the Stryker Brigade equipment, or slowed it from going through. People put themselves on the line, said, we will not accept this. No equipment goes through here. And made quite a fuss about it. And they have an encampment up there called Camp Quixote. I'm going to be playing an interview with Matt from Camp Quixote, talking about the update of the Poor People's Union up there, which organized opposition to the city's anti-homeless laws. The sitting ban, similar to the Santa Cruz sitting ban, you know. All good hypocritical, liberal-talking but conservative-acting or bigoted-acting city councils have a kind of kinship there, ours and theirs. And Berkeley is looking at a similar set of harassment laws of the poor to placate merchants who are ever eager to find a scapegoat for their business problems, and conservative residents who would prefer to remove homeless people and drive poor people out of sight, if not out of town. These are harsh words, but I'm afraid that they're justified by the record, and I believe that's where we're at in a lot of these cities. And frankly, we're not really winning, and we have to fight harder if we want to stop this kind of stuff from happening and pose real alternatives. So there's going to be a report from Arcata, California, where there was an encampment by the People's Project, essentially a 10-day demonstration urging Arcata to stop its harassment of the homeless, to fund homeless programs. And there was quite a city council meeting last night around that issue, some of which I'm going to play the dialogue or the oral communications section. I'll play some of the oral communications from that city council meeting and then more on Sunday when I come back on Sunday morning. Looks like a phone call. Let's see who could be calling in here. An actual phone call by Cracky. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey.
Hello.
This is Bob. I was wondering if it's okay to come by and bring somebody to do an interview.
As long as they're not homeless. I never associate with homeless people, you know. They might steal something or spare change you. You never can tell.
Yeah, that's the problem here is lock everything down. We're coming in.
Got to be careful they don't sleep on the floor either. That's always a problem.
Okay.
And they may not be toilet drained either. Okay, so yeah, bring them in and, of course, blindfold them. You are coming to a secret studio, right?
Yeah, I told him a secret. Well, he probably is pulling his yang, he said.
Yeah, keep the secret. All right, well, looking forward to it.
All right.
Bye. And Bob is an activist with a human rights organization, which was meeting every Saturday at the Homeless Service Center. But the Homeless Service Center has cut back its services, so it isn't open on the weekends, except, I guess, in the mornings for 3 hours, from 7 to 10 in the morning, and you can get breakfast there. After that, there's no sanctuary for you there. Not that there was a hell of a lot of sanctuary before. I think you were allowed there for a couple hours in the afternoon. You had to leave by 5. You couldn't be there during the day after, was it from 10 to 2 or something, or from 10:30 to 2:30. In any case, what originally was opened up as a kind of a, well, Linda the Lark Edwards 15 years ago called it a concentration camp, a place where it's not really, more of a diversion camp, where homeless people whom merchants did not want hanging around the mall and downtown could sort of hang out as an alternative and so not drive away tourists. At least that was the theory, particularly when we were protesting the laws that criminalized people for sleeping at night and feeding each other and things of that sort. The idea was to give people sort of a safety zone to go to, not to sleep at night, not to actually get their basic needs met. No, we didn't want to do that. That might lure other homeless people to the area or make it too comfortable here, you know, that sort of thing. But it was at least a place where people could come during the day and hang out. No longer. For the last couple years, under the leadership of Ken Cole, old Ken Cole, he has decreed, or this board has decreed, I'm not quite sure what the process was that reached this decision, no hanging out during the day. And, of course, if you try to sleep there at night, you'll end up like Robert Steffen, you know, the umbrella man on downtown. Before he was the umbrella man, he was the man in the bag. I don't know if you remember in front of Bunny's Shoes back in 99. He ran for president and had a sign and sort of sat on a bench during the day announcing his candidacy. And this upset the Bunny's Shoes people and, of course, the authorities at B who couldn't stand the idea of having that kind of thing on the downtown area. And when he tried to go sleep at night at the Homeless Service Center, what happened? But he was arrested for trespass. That's what we got. And, of course, we have another situation at the Homeless Service Center where there is, they have been told by the city attorney not to give out the letter that says our services are full and tell the courts to drop citations. So they're claiming that the armory has not been full any night this winter except for one night. And that's because no more than 100 people have been recorded at the armory, in fact, except on that one night. But what Ken Cole did say to the city council when Ed Porter made that claim, council member Porter said, oh, you know, our services aren't full, was that it's a miserable situation. It's really full at 50 or 60, and people have to make a decision about whether to camp in a relatively safe and more comfortable and more secure situation or line up for hours in lines, that they have to get up very early in the morning. They are denied access to their loved ones, their possessions. They have to go through ID checks to get in. It's a difficult situation and a rather wretched one for people who use the armory and often not accessible for people who work And, of course, it would no way be accessible, and it's no way accessible to the overwhelming majority of homeless people, of whom there are 1,500 to 2,000 and on the armory. And if you include the emergency shelter program, which is the church floor program, about 160 spaces total. And tonight, with the armory closed, it's about 40 spaces. And what have the police and the city council goon squads done? They have, in fact, made it even more difficult by increasing ticketing in the Poganip and increasing parks and rec harassment by increasing the number of rangers and cops up there to a tune of $700,000. Actually, I think the cost is $250,000 with the extra money. I'm not sure where that's going. I'm going to play a little music while I escort the guests into the studio and, of course, you know, give them a complete ID check to make sure we're not being evaded by homeless terrorists, and then I'll be back to you. Stay tuned and call in, 427-3772.
He said, do not speak your mother tongue. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Girl, do you know from which I come? He said, don't let me talk about disgrace. Yeah, the scratching white of my habitual shame. Well, acquainted with original sin. Head of my pen for 12 years. Why, dear, why such pain in your eyes? Why, dear, don't want to live? Why, my sordid life, my sordid life. Down, just lay all down, just lay.
This is life for
And that was In Harmony with the Homeless, another cut, this one by Laura Harding, a song for Thomas, Lay It Down. Actually, the last one you heard before you get the meal wasn't Loana Navarro, it was David Morgan, for all of you sharp-eared folks who are trying to track down these songs. Well, we're here on Free Radio again, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. In the studio with me is the redoubtable Bob Patton, who I was saying before, he's with the Human Rights Organization. Hi there, Bob.
Hello, Robert. Thanks for inviting us in.
Sure, no problem. Just behave yourself, all right? And also with us is James. Hi, James. You're one of the employees out at the Homeless Service Center.
Well, I'm a volunteer.
You're a volunteer.
I'm a volunteer and on a steady basis.
You do all the work, but you don't get paid shit.
That's about the size of it.
There you go. And, of course, you always have a place to sleep at night. They, of course, make sure that they wouldn't deny you the right
to sleep. Right? It's called a camp.
Camp? You mean you sleep illegally at night?
Well, yeah, I've been illegal for about 5 years. I've been illegal for about 5 years. Camping in various
communities. Well, that's not a good example to set for our youth, my man.
But it's called survival.
Indeed. And how old are you?
I'm 65 years old.
And how many people in your camp?
Myself.
You're just alone?
Me, myself, and I.
And have you had any trouble from the police?
No.
You pay them regularly?
I don't ever see them.
And are you, is your camp a fairly long distance from where you work?
About a mile and a half.
And I heard a lot from Bob earlier, who called me earlier today, telling me that there's a kind of been a crackdown in the last few weeks after the Armory closed in the middle of April against people in the Poganip. Is that accurate?
That is very accurate. What they have done is the Rangers have come in, destroyed camps, tore up tents that people were surviving in, scattered their personal belongings, and left them a notice that it was time for them to move. It's like a Gestapo situation.
How many reports have you gotten about this in the last couple weeks since the Armory closed on April, 15th or so?
Well, I personally know of probably around 12 or 13 camps that have been completely tore up in the last, since the Armory has been.
How would that compare with the month before? Were they doing it before as well? Or?
No, they weren't. They weren't as adamant about tearing up the camps. They were giving out tickets at that point.
And because I've heard that Ranger Wallace is a regular, dare I say, terror going through
That's a good term.
That is, and that it isn't something that started on April 15th, but he's been doing this for the last couple of years, actually.
Yes, and he's taken his position and put a personal twist on it. He actually spends his time going out of his way to find these certain individuals that are obviously violating some kind of rule or law and harass the individuals. You know, the railroad tracks, walking down the railroad tracks, going to the park and laying down with a sleeping bag. If the sleeping bag is covering the individual, he's going to get hassled by Wallace. If Wallace catches them in the camps, then the individuals will get a ticket and they have to sit there and watch him destroy their camp.
Now, I understand that he marks the camp, and then some either crews, either labor-ready or public works, come through and destroy the camp.
This is true.
Do we know, have you actually seen this happen or simply heard stories of it?
No, I have not seen this happen because my function at the center is, I'm pretty busy at trying to help
the homeless.
There?
Let me move to
I serve on the main line. I see that the main line is kept in order.
The food, the meal.
And I see to the cleaning up of the dining room and seeing that that is complete.
Bob?
I want to talk a little bit about the increase in number of meals that have been served in the last few days, especially being it's the first of the month and usually don't see this heavy of a clientele.
It's true. At the beginning of the month, usually people have their own
usually,
money.
Usually. You know. Now, yesterday we served somewhere, from what I'm understanding, 50 to 65 plates for dinner last night. Tonight, we served 147 plates over the counter, which is a large influx. It's a large difference.
Are the folks new? Are they familiar to you? What's the personnel look like? I mean, the patrons.
The patrons?
Yeah.
No, they're all the same ones. It's just that either the money didn't last.
After 3 days?
Because they're targets. Let's face reality. You take a mental patient, a physical patient, out of a hospital, give him a $700 or $800 check, he becomes a target for many aspects in society. One aspect is he becomes a target from the drug addicts and the alcoholics.
Well, let me ask you this.
He's got money.
Let me ask this, though. I mean, are you saying that 70 people, a month ago, was this the same situation or was it different in terms of the number of people served at the beginning of the month?
Actually, I couldn't tell you the number right off the top of my head because I don't want to falsify any numbers.
Right.
But we've been serving anywhere from 130 plates to 190 plates in the dinner. In the dinners.
Was that the case a month ago as well?
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, was it the case that there was such a jump a month ago, or was there a difference?
No, it's just an influx from yesterday to today that I
you
don't
didn't
have
know,
an
You didn't notice
for.
It a month ago.
I didn't notice that a month ago.
So a month ago, would you say that there was, like, more need persistently through the month or less need persistently through the month? In other words, you didn't notice a jump, so it must have been sort of regular.
It's been, like I said, last month.
Even at the beginning.
The plates going over the counter were between 130.
Even on the first and second of the month.
Absolutely.
So in a way, and I hate to be the devil's advocate here, we could be saying there's an improvement. Originally, at least for the first couple days, or at least for the first day or two, there was a drop in the number of people who had food problems, or at least who showed up. Maybe they just hated your cooking, if you thought of that.
That's a possibility, but I doubt it very much, because they do rave about the balanced meals that we try to put over the counter.
Did you get reports of any kind of theft that happened among a lot of people in the last couple of days? Or
well, there are reports in the hygiene room that the security is not adequate, that people's belongings are being gone through, and this is at night. From what I understand, some of the women are having problems with the women group.
But there are only 40 people total, right, in these groups?
No, there's right now the church group men's is qualified to put 14 people inside of the churches throughout the community.
Right, but the total number of people isn't more than 40 or 50, including men and women, right?
No more than 40.
So it's a really kind of a drop in the bucket for the number of people out there.
In comparison to the need.
Right.
You know, let's face reality. When the armory was open, they were housing anywhere from 90 to 100 on a regular basis.
Warehousing, in fact.
Well, bedding. Mm-hmm. Bedding them. Because they would bus them to the armory and bus them back.
After waiting an hour and then possibly...
Whatever the requirements were.
Right.
Everybody had to put up with it to survive.
You ever live up there in that? Ever go to the armory yourself?
Yes.
When was the last time you were up there?
The last day that we were there, which was the 11th.
How was it?
It was fine. It was fine. In fact, on the 11th, I think we had a downflux of amount of people that had stayed that night.
It was what Ken Cole said before the city council, I think in February, was that the armory isn't really comfortable past 50 people there. Is that accurate or not?
I wouldn't say so. They housed 100 people in one night.
Right, but he says it's not comfortable. That's not accurate, though, because I think Ken Cole doesn't. You may be a better source than Cole.
What does comfortable mean? It's better than sleeping beside a river with a duck waking you up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
What about three people coughing and sneezing, somebody else spitting?
Those are issues that homeless people have to face a lot of unhealthy situations.
Would it be say it's unhealthier indoors or outdoors? What's your feeling on that?
For me?
Given the armor. I mean,
for me?
Yeah.
Outdoors.
It's healthier outdoors.
Absolutely.
And do you think that is generally the case?
Yes.
So in other words, you prefer to be outdoors than in the armory?
Absolutely, because one of the things is I guess I'm lucid enough to take care of myself physically and survive physically in this type of environment. And because of that, I keep myself clean. I keep myself healthy. I see that I've got my medication if I need it. which is high blood pressure medication. I'm 65 years old, so I have to kind of watch that. That's a major thing. I also have COPD, which is emphysema and asthma combined together, which is worse, and it's slowly progressing.
Mm-hmm.
But at 65 years old and 50 years of smoking, I should have my head examined.
Still smoking?
A little bit. Okay. Very, very little.
I see you didn't light up in the studio here.
No.
Excellent. I would be coughing my head off.
Yes.
And probably they'd arrest me, but that's another story. So if anyone's got any questions to ask here of James or Robert, can I give your last names? Is that 'cause it's so, you know.
Sure.
We have actually, you're James Sherman and you're Robert Patton. So we actually have Sherman and Patton here in the studio. I had
two,
to say that.
Three, four,
exactly.
One, two, three,
yeah,
four.
Who says we don't love military stuff?
And the general gives the colonel an order.
Or something like that. Yeah. So, Bob, I know that you did some researching. You were out there with Bernard, I guess, this morning, sniffing around at the Homeless Service Center. And you found out, James, you just handed me the new hours for the Homeless Service Center, Monday through Friday at 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., but actually you can't be there during the middle of the day, right, unless you are at all. What's the story with that?
It means at that point you can be there between 7:30 and 5 p.m. for the purposes of laundry, showers, or bathroom.
So you got to take a really long shit, I guess, huh?
Well, that's bluntly putting it, yeah.
Yes.
But even at the laundry level, we only have four washers to service.
How many dryers?
There's four. I mean, two washers and four dryers.
Mm-hmm.
There's two washers and four dryers to service 200 to 250 people every week.
Well, yeah, but the Poganip,
not enough hours.
The Poganip clubhouse needs another $1 million for repair, don't you think?
Well, I don't know about any.
I'm talking about
figures.
The golf course and the real needs of the people in our community. Homeless people, that's another
issue.
Let's
put a golf course in the back, a putting course in the back parking lot.
And the police station needs a new shooting range. I think at least they did when they built the new police station at a cost overrun of $5 million. I mean, that was necessary.
And they needed help to buy the guns.
Well, the guns, we have to have all the latest armaments just in case there's an invasion and a terrorist attack.
It's very expensive to buy guns nowadays.
Well,
unless you buy them on the street.
It's not hard, particularly if you're a Prozac-addled person who happens to be running around a school shooting up people, as has happened more recently.
That's
on the
easy
East Coast.
To get a gun then, isn't it? You can just go down to the gun shop and buy one.
Yeah, that's great. You got it. Again, we're kind of ranging far afield here, but I'm not a person who opposes the right of a person to bear arms or arm bears, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think it's a right people have and perhaps should protect. But nonetheless, let's put that one aside.
I'd like to make a couple of statements.
Sure,
I did some investigation this afternoon while I was at the center, and I went to the day service program coordinator, who happens to be Marcus Vanavilos, and he recommended that the public, if they want to do something about solving this homeless situation, whatever suggestions they may have, could write to Sam Farr, the congressman, that's from this county. And the food coordinator, which after finding out that the program is $200,000 in the red after the second year, and now they're cutting hours for their staff, they're cutting two dinners out during the weekend, there'll be nobody serving dinners for the homeless over Saturdays and Sundays.
I think that's a real important thing that need to be brought up here when we're talking about the new schedule, because actually the worst part of it is Saturday and Sunday there is going to be a complete close down of the campus or of the homeless service center.
Exactly.
After 10 o'clock.
After 10 o'clock, that is true.
Between 8 and 9 will be the meals. Between 9 and 10, you get the last of whatever you need to be getting done there. Things are closed up. Everybody's leaving. See
and
you
there'll
downtown
be no
on Pacific Avenue.
Okay, Nicole will still have his house and his job, so what's the problem?
Well, we could talk about that, too. I think there's some real opinions.
Happy
on
days
that.
Are here for Ken Cole.
Well, they have been for 9 years, I must say. Although, I suppose he would claim, and not without justice, that there are probably more prestigious and better-paying jobs he could have gone to. I can't really speak for that I guess, you know, it's a real problem when I'm always, you know, I hate to be a booster of homeless services, but I want to point out that, you know, because I have so many questions about the inadequacy of the services, not just because they aren't well funded, but because there's no homeless input into what really happens there. They're controlled by a bunch of conservative business people who don't really want the homeless to have basic rights and just want them out of sight, and who don't want to serve the homeless in a positive way that might actually meet their needs for fear more of them will come to town. What do you think? Am I too cynical on that?
No, I think you're close to the wire right there.
Well, here's someone on the wire. Let's see what she or he has to say.
And I actually turned down my mic by mistake. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Just to say that it's more interesting when you have your mic up.
Oh, come. You're not I talk too much as it is already.
Well, yeah, that's true. Turn it back down.
All right. Is any other comments you have, Ms. Sarcasm?
It's very interesting hearing what's going on at the Homeless Services Center and the real-life experiences of people that are using their services.
Yeah, I agree.
I got to go.
All right, then. Thank you, caller, for ex-producer Becky Johnson for your assistance in this matter. Still dipping your oar in Free Radio, I see. Good for you.
One of the other advices that was given to me as a suggestion, if the shelter is $200,000 behind and they're taking away two meals a week, which is eight meals a month that they're taking away, how much would it cost to revamp that system and make it viable to feed the homeless over the weekend? A dinner, because they're going to get breakfast and then they're going to get nothing from then on.
Well, what about this $5 million family shelter that's half full all the time? I mean, what is that about? Or am I wrong? I'd heard
that
it was
again, that's a hidden program from the homeless. Nothing is being said. Nothing is publicly arrayed there about that. And I don't think anybody really knows how many apartments are available or not available over there.
You know,
we do know is that they're feeding approximately 20 people at the family shelter every day.
Well, you know, the watchword is these days, and you have the poverty pimps, you know, kind of gathering for the kill to get the money from the feds and the consortium of care and the 10-year program to end, to provide middle-class jobs for some poverty pimps, and they claim to end homelessness. And you have these three programs clustered around the Homeless Service Center, four actually, including the Homeless Persons Health Project, River Street, you know, the River Street Shelter, the Page Smith Community House, Transitional. And, you know, I've always said, in fact, I was arrested to make sure that the River Street Shelter opened up its annex 16 years ago, 18 years ago, actually, when Fred Gray and Paul Brindell were running that place and wouldn't do it. And eight of us slept in and said, you would damn well do it. And they did it. 2 weeks later, they did it. They decided they didn't need 6 months to repair it as they'd previously thought. So, I mean, we moved to open up the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program services. And we provided our own transportation because they wouldn't do it. And so, I mean, we were concerned about it. But what you really want to do, of course, is if you can't, for me, this is what I decided. If you can't provide the housing, and we need housing, not shelters, obviously, the housing that people need, you at least give them the opportunity and don't harass them for surviving with the shelter that they have to make for themselves. Tents, camps, whatever they're doing, yurts, body shelves where they do these Japanese, you know, mini places, you know, which could be done in a cost-effective way. The trouble is, it doesn't happen unless people get together and demand it. And I guess I want to ask you, what's your sense, James, of the possibility of people actually standing up on these issues? It's happened in Arcata. For the last 2 weeks, there's been a protest there where people stood up and said, we want our services restored, or at least leave us alone. And the same thing happened up in Olympia, Washington, where Camp Quixote is formed and is still going, and we'll be hearing an interview on that later in the program. Is it likely to happen here in Santa Cruz? You were here when Camp Paradise was around, right?
No.
When did you come to town?
I actually came to town 4 months ago. 3 months ago. 3 months ago.
You're kind of a newcomer.
I came, well, no. What I've been traveling around 5 years to different shelters, homeless centers, gospel missions, just to see what's going on. Because prior to that, I was in Mexico for 5 years with my son.
Cheaper living down there, right?
Well, I was in Puerto Escondido in Oaxaca, which is absolutely beautiful. And when I went there, my son was 13.
¿Tú hablas español?
Más o menos.
Menos
o más.
Probablemente
más o menos.
Sí.
Pero, yeah, I do speak some. And I made a survival down there. I became a survivalist in the beach level.
So why did you come back? Why didn't you stay down in Mexico?
Because my son became of age that needed to go to college.
Uh-huh.
And that was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He now has his Bachelor of Arts in Music, and he's going on for his master's.
Right on. I apologize for interrupting you. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
You were saying.
One of the things that I wanted to bring up is that if a corporation is managed by a CEO, and 1 year you're $200,000 in the red, and the action that you did to create this problem is repetitive for the next year, and you become $200,000 in the red again, something tells me it's mismanagement.
Oh, come. How could you suggest this?
Well, because mismanagement, if you figure, if I'm depending on grants and loans or grants and money to be given to the program and they don't come in and you continue to spend money, you obviously forgot one of the 12 steps. If I continue to do what I'm doing, I will continue to get the same results.
So I think we call it more than mismanagement. I call it Mr. Mismanagement or Mr.
Whatever
management.
The issues are. I don't know.
Because Ken Cole presumably, although I guess it's the board of directors that makes these decisions, Ken Cole runs the data. Who makes the? I guess that's the question. Have you ever been to one of these board of directors meetings?
No.
Because they happen every month.
They don't let us know when they're...
Every Thursday at 5:30, third or fourth Thursday of every month, I believe.
Do you think they would let us into that little tiny room?
You bet they would. They have to. It's a public meeting. You have a right to be there. Don't let them kick you out. Not that they'll pay any attention to you. Not that they'll let you say a damn thing other than maybe three sentences. But you have a right to be there. And you have a right...
No, I understand it.
You bring 15 homeless people with you and say, these are hungry people who didn't eat because you guys squandered $200,000 again. What the fuck are you going to do about it?
Exactly.
Then they would get a little bit nervous about that. Of course, you might lose your job pretty quickly. It's possible.
Well, what gets to me is here we have an executive CEO. We have a board of directors. We have, at one time, there were three counselors in the center program.
Council members.
Now there's one.
Oh, counselors, yeah.
There's one counselor for the center that handles the family program. And I'm not too sure that they handle anybody else that's in need of psychological or sociological assistance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're getting any. That was one of the cuts, two of the counselors. Now they've cut one person down to 8 hours a week, and they've cut off 5 hours a week out of the mailroom. They've cut two meals out of the dining room. They've cut the program to not be available to the homeless for the hours that are involved over the weekends.
And
now, who are they hitting? Who are they hitting for the loss of their money?
Well, this,
they're hitting the street people, the targets.
I'm sure they're cutting Ken Cole's salary, too, right?
Of course they are. Ken Cole can afford this, can he?
I wonder if they are.
Well, yeah, right.
You know,
over my dead body.
Well, you know, you have a right to ask these questions, and I would encourage you, James, to A, you know, tomorrow morning, bright and early, or...
Oh, yeah. I tried to talk to Ken Cole today on the street, and he said, oh, that's nice, and walked on.
Send him an email, and do it from Bob's machine. Send him an email, and when he declines to do it, we'll make the email public, and it's as simple as that.
I wanted to be fair. I went to the
sure.
day service program coordinator. I had a discussion with him. I went to the program director of the food. I went to some of the other staff members throughout the center to ask them what would it take to assist this program, to make this program work, because we have a homeless population of 200 to 300 just at the center alone, not throughout the whole city and the county. And one of the advices was from the director, if everyone would send in $1 to the Homeless Service Center for the purpose of helping to solve the weekend food problem, you know, if every person in the county did that, well, we're talking about $300,000. Ken Cole could pay his $200,000 debt, and we'd still have $100,000 to assist the food program for the weekends.
Well, that's nice. I mean, you
that's
know,
a nice idea.
Panhandle of the community for the problems that the mismanagement at the Homeless Service Center has produced, if it's mismanagement. I hear this from you, and frankly, I haven't investigated it. Who knows? Maybe there was some catastrophic change in the situation that I'm not aware of. You've been here only 4 months, so you don't have the details, perhaps, from some of the history. Bob here has obviously not looked through the books, and he's snoring himself. So, I mean, I think it's certainly, though, relevant to raise the issue and ask the question. And if Ken Cole doesn't want to answer it, then I think the question should be raised more loudly and more clearly until you get an answer. It doesn't mean something is necessarily wrong, but it certainly is wrong that the person won't answer the question. I mean, that is, that there something is wrong. Not even if the person has exactly the right answers to give and is choosing not to give them, it's still inappropriate that he doesn't want to give them. So, we're talking with James Sherman and Bob Patton, fighting military men here in our studio. Actually, not at all, very much. James, is what's your position at the Homeless Service Center, James?
I'm just a volunteer.
And how many volunteers actually are involved in the Homeless Service Center?
That one I really cannot.
155?
No. I have on the line one to two other volunteers that work with me. There's another volunteer that manages the refrigeration projects and the sort and separating of the donated foods.
You got the choice bits, I'll bet.
Not,
a lot of graph that goes on.
We don't do that. We're volunteers. We care about what's going on there. Yeah, we do get gratuities because we're working.
Yeah.
So there is some benefits to being in there, handling whatever it is we handle, mm-hmm. but we don't take, I haven't seen anybody take advantage here.
Big time, you mean? No big
time.
You
know, no big time advantage.
Because that used to be a major complaint of the predecessor group, the Homeless Community Resource Center, run by Karen Gillette. That, and I've heard complaints about the Homeless Service Center, too, that, you know, that some of the staff make off of some of the choice goodies, but I have no idea if it's true, and I haven't really investigated it. And I don't know, and it was not, those complaints are not within the last 4 months, so I can't say. Here is an opportunity, by the way, for those of you who are listening to this program, and you are listening to Free Radio at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org on the Internet. You can call in 427-3772, 427-3772, and ask a question, make a comment, perhaps let me know if I've turned off my own mic again by mistake, something like that, or whether, you know, whatever's going right or wrong, if you have a right to voice your opinion, at least briefly until I cut you off. So think of that and give me a call. Bob?
Well, I'd like to appeal to people in the community who have some association with human rights or any of the concerns about the issues, especially on the weekend, where the homeless folks getting food, water, and other services. Because with the service center closed, they're not even get access to drinking water during the day on the weekends. So I'd like to see people come downtown, just on your own, this weekend, and see what's going on with the increased number of people that we expect to be on the streets on the weekend because of the homeless service center being closed. And if nothing else, just do witness to see what is going on there. Or if you feel compelled, compassionate, see if you can help some of these people or help them, help the unhoused citizens express themselves in the city council.
Which is coming up on Tuesday, actually.
Coming up this coming Tuesday. James, you had something else you wanted to
bring up. Yeah, I just wanted to say one of the questions when Ken was having the meeting of notifying all of the people that wanted to come to the meeting to be notified about this shutdown.
What meeting is that?
To notify the homeless people that the shutdown
there was a
was
community
be
meeting
these.
Of some kind.
It was a community
as distinguished from the board of directors meeting, which
exactly.
I was suggesting. Go
exactly.
ahead.
And the question was, Ken Cole, did you call the soup kitchen? Did you call Elm Street before making these decisions about shutting down to see if those just those two organizations could service the homeless people and help them on the weekends? And provocatively, or whatever you might call it, Ken Cole answered, no, we haven't called them yet, but we've got these notices. It isn't a bad idea to give them a call. Kind of late, if you ask me.
Yeah, I remember asking questions of Ken Cole after he'd spoken to the Santa Cruz neighbors. Bob, you were there at the where they held their little community shindig at the police station on how can we control the homeless and still look like we're compassionate, caring people and get these fuckers out of our neighborhood because, you know, that sort of thing, without giving them any adequate toileting facilities or basic elemental justice.
Yeah, one person there, one of the members said, yeah, the needy and the greedy.
Well, I remember Cole declining. I mean, he answered a question or two. When I asked him why he hadn't returned my phone calls, he said, because I don't have to. Which is true. You know, I haven't got subpoena power. I'm not, you know, the Congress trying to get Gonzalez to testify. But Cole is in a position of some public accountability, and we're homeless advocates here. And it's not unreasonable that we should ask him these questions and expect the courtesy of a response. Cole apparently has reached the point in his career where he doesn't feel he doesn't have to respond to inquiries. And not even from homeless people who are providing labor, essentially free labor, right? You're not getting paid, right?
No, I get no payment at all.
You know, you're essentially, I don't want to say slave labor, but, you know, I mean, you are pretty damn cheap labor, you know, for him. And he doesn't do you the, I guess his answer was, he gave you an answer, but it wasn't really a terribly satisfactory answer. He said you talked to him on the street today and didn't get an answer to another question you'd asked.
Well, I was going to present to him the fact that I was going to be here on the radio program, and I wanted to know if there was anything that he wanted to have said over the air by his own words, just like I went to the day service program coordinator mm-hmm. and the program director of the food service.
Uh-huh.
I went to the people on the that are homeless. I got mm-hmm. some requests from them. I got one request there. Why was the dumpster removed on Vernon Street when the homeless people were removing the trash from the mountain that the Rangers wanted cleaned up, but yet they took the dumpster away? So now the people on Vernon Street, the homeowners, have said to the homeless people, if you put the trash in bags and tie them up, we will take them to our dumpster and support this cause. Now, the city has taken away a dumpster that was definitely needed, is definitely needed, and the greatest complaint by the Rangers and the police is that the homeless leave trash. Where are they going to take it?
Yeah, when we was at the... Robert and I were at the downtown neighbors meeting. Ken Cole did bring up something in that same line about the homeless people wanting to have accessibility to a trash can or to a dumpster at that place where they exit out of the Poconip. And right out of the audience comes somebody who works for either the Parks and Rec or for the city saying, oh, no, you won't want to do that because they'll just throw trash everywhere. You're just encouraging them. They'll just stack stuff all around the dumpster. They'll have no respect, blah, blah, blah.
Well, we know homeless people are crazy, drunk, and addicted and lack the basic elemental skills to write checks. That's why we have to have special programs for them to learn these essential skills. Wouldn't you agree, James?
Let me give you a concept. Nixon wrote a program that was to kick out the mentally deficient and the physically handicapped from the institutions that were marginable. The reason being that the federal government Social Security Division was paying one and a quarter times more than what they would get as a check. So let's say that a person makes $800 a month in his check. No. He was in an institution where he was safe. He was secure. He was given his medication. He was given his three meals a day. He was given clean clothing. And he felt safe and secure. Now he's kicked out of the institution. What happened? If he's earning $800, it was costing $1,600 to $1,800 to house this man or this person. Now they kick him out. What have they saved? $1,000 or $800.
Well, the Vietnam War needed some help.
Well, you know, Iraq needs some help, too, you know.
And we'll get it with the help of our Democratic Congress, yeah.
But the thing that I'm trying to get a picture of is the truth about the money. The truth about the money.
I don't know that. Yeah, go ahead.
The truth about the money is it took double the cost away from the Social Security Division.
Where do you get the figures from? I'm wondering because I don't know if that's actually is that where have you
those figures are the figures that I'm quoting right here is pretty true because the cost overrides to have somebody institutionalized is
well,
quite expensive.
First of all, I'm not a fan of institutions, and I don't think they're particularly safe for people. But I think what they were supposed to do was set up community health programs. And you know, housing programs and job programs that they didn't set up. And therefore, they essentially left people. And I'm also not a big fan of this medication, which I think makes people generally worse, although it dopes them up so they kind of wander around in a daze rather than do things like express troublesome emotions about how they feel.
Well,
you know, but I understand what you're saying, that profit is a motive here, a significant motive.
Let me show you something in an explanation. Here's a person that's mentally handicapped. He is now on the street, or he or she is now on the street. The first or the third of the month, they're given a check for $700 to $800 a month. They now are a target. Number one, they're a target to the businesses of the community. Why do I say this? Motels raise their rent between the 1st and the 10th for motel rooms. Why? They're targeting the homeless, because the homeless want to feel that they can take a shower in privacy, that they can lay on a bed in comfort and look at a television program.
Are you suggesting our progressive hotel owners are trying to rip off our poor homeless? How can you say
Wouldn't
that?
That be a good target?
Would accuse you of being a racist.
Wouldn't that be a nice target? Now, let's take also the fact that the alcoholics, the drug addicts, and just the general homeless people take the people that are making this money targets because they need money to support their habits. So what do? They target the homeless, mentally deficient and physically deficient, because they have money. Wait, let me finish this. The thing is that they're a target by their own kind. Now, the police focus on the homeless because they're a target and because the mentally deficient and the handicapped deficient, then because of their survival mode, turns to be drug addicts or alcoholics because they're out there trying to survive with the other drug addicts and alcoholics. So birds of a feather definitely feel safe together.
Well, plus the fact that they try to sleep, which we know is illegal.
Oh, that's a big no-no. But what happens if the police stop a homeless individual that is mentally handicapped or physically handicapped and he has a baggie of, let's say, methamphetamine, which is a bad drug? We're not saying it's not a bad drug.
It's not necessarily that bad. It keeps you awake at night so you don't, you know, violate the sleeping ban.
Well, that's a good one, too. That's a good way to look at it. But if they're arrested, now this person that was mentally handicapped, that was an institution that felt safe, is now a criminal. Our society has created a criminal out of a mentally handicapped individual or physically handicapped.
Like an economically disadvantaged person, too. Not just
exactly.
I mean,
but
you don't have to be, you know,
survival is a very...
I don't like the idea of characterizing, I don't think it's true to characterize most homeless people as
not saying most.
Mentally ill or handicapped. I think people, you know, they cycle through homelessness and a lot of people are there for different reasons. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org.
Thank you.
With me, you're listening to James Sherman and, of course, occasionally grumbling from the side is Bob Patton. That was beaming from the side. He's a smiling thing.
When James and I were talking, let's see, Bernard Klitzner, another member of the Human Rights Organization, was down there at the campus, Coral Street campus, they call it these days.
Campus,
and some,
I love that.
Some, they don't call it the lot anymore, and it's not the lot manager.
The palace. How about the palace?
Yeah, one person had their title changed from lot manager to campus coordinator
campus
or something.
Campus coordinator, how sweet.
But anyways, there was some rumor, and I guess you heard about it yesterday, too. I couldn't get verified by anyone. James, I heard people talking about it, that the so-called downtown ordinances, the camping ordinances, have been rescinded or changed to allow for camping if there was no fire, no trash, and some other kind
of... Well, that's what should be the case, of course. We've been urging that for decades. However, and I've heard that rumor from different people, but it's certainly, as far as I know, not the case. I put in a call to that man about the public relations department of the police station, Zach Friend, who hasn't returned my call yet, but, you know, he maybe has just been out. I asked him, is this true? You know, has the city council undergone a religious conversion, or has the city manager decided the Jones decision is going to axe everybody unless they start paying attention to the basic constitutional rights of the homeless?
Well,
who knows? But I doubt it.
There's probably somebody from the police department listening, so if you would call Zach and have him call in so we could figure out what's going on there.
That's possible. Well, frankly, I don't know if anybody's listening to the show. We had one caller tonight, so... Anybody who's listening, call in to 427-3772 and give us your view or throw a question at us. Did you get something you wanted to say yourself, James?
Yeah, there's another thing that I'd like to present to the public. The weather's getting to be kind of nice out here. Yeah, we're having a little rain right now. But one of these weekends, what would be wrong with a bunch of Santa Cruz people going down to the river trails and setting up their own little place to camp? For the weekend.
Absolutely not.
As a family outing.
I would say,
to help the homeless.
Oh, I see. It's a good idea. I mean, actually, I would like to see, I'm always pushing for the protest encampments, too, because homeless people don't just have to camp on the weekends. They have to camp all throughout the week and throughout the year and so forth and throughout the next decade until they can find internal lodging. Again, I apologize to folks for turning down my mic and not turning it up. And it looks like we actually have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert, James, and Bob.
Hey, Robert, you really are having fun turning your mic down, aren't you?
Well, at least I get a phone call or two when I do. I think that's part of my motivation. Otherwise, you know, who would ever call in?
Pretty strange. Every time I want to hear the radio, I go, what's going on? What happened? Do I have to check the stream? No, it's just Robert's got his mic down again.
Well, yeah, but my voice is so booming, you can still hear it even on the other mics, probably.
I don't know. I can just barely, though.
Well, I'll try and be more attentive. Any comments, though, about anything you've heard so far on the air?
No, I just feel really, really awful about what's going on. I just wish we could all rally together and protest it, but I don't see any reason.
Well, James here might be a good organizer. What do you think, James?
What would you think about camping out for a weekend, either in the Poconos or along the riverbanks where there's campsites and other things that have been cleaned up? What would you think about camping out as a protest?
Well, I've been supportive of that idea. I thought people should do it. You know, why not? You know?
Well, I'm talking about the general public. I'm not talking about the homeless individuals.
Oh, you mean like a big protest with people joining in and everything?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't see why not.
Well, I think that's anything more, caller, you want to add to this? Or
no, other than hope we can hear you now.
Well, I hope so, too.
Okay, thanks.
You know, I mean, actually, there was Camp Paradise, which I mentioned to you before, was a homeless camp, but it was supported a lot by housed people in the community. Some people actually came down there to camp out in solidarity, and it was along the river. The problem with camping along the river is twofold. First of all, we have some rather intense environmentalists in this area who immediately hit the roof whenever human beings start camping near the river, sometimes for justifiable reasons, because the city will not allow you to put in a porta potty, so you have to take a dump somewhere, and it presumably gets to the river unless you're very, very careful, and sometimes even if you try to be. And then also, you know, they had generators and there's oil. that came near the river and so forth. But I think that a protest encampment could be done in any number of places. I mean, the most obvious place that we used to do it at back 17, 18, 19 years ago was City Hall. There's a big grassy area. It's public property. You don't really need a permit, although, you know, they're going to claim you do, no doubt. And now, unfortunately, they can close it at night because it's Parks and Rec, and they suddenly have the power to just decree it being closed without taking it to their Parks and Rec Commission. But it's still something that could be done and then challenged in court if they tried to stop us. And also, I mean, there are more creative ideas, like we could camp in vehicles downtown all along Pacific Avenue. You know, you could set up a sleeping bag on top, particularly as the weather gets nicer, on top of your car during the day. You could have a camp out and let the shoppers know, "Hi there, downtown shoppers." But you realize you're camping, you're patronizing a bunch of shops that support major bigotry against poor people. As they're cutting down services, they're trying to ramp up their profits. That's the deal that's happening downtown. So that could be done too. I mean, if somebody like your, if you had a few key homeless organizers and activists who really wanted to do this, I think you'd find a lot of support, or at least significant support, from people who live in their houses. That's my guess.
Well, it's amazing to me at my age. I come through an era from 1940s to the 1970s where the hobos were running at the end of their reign. But that was a 30-year or a 20-year period, 30-year period, where the hobos traveling throughout America, working when they could as a gardener or as a you know, mowing lawns and doing things for the homes and stuff to get food, but they lived down at the riverbanks. All of a sudden, our civil rights are being crossed, and we cannot do that. We started from that. Was the hobos homeless? Because they created their homes. They had their fires that were under control. They cooked their food. They didn't need a shelter to take care of them. They didn't need people to donate food because they would go around to the community and knock on doors and offer to do some work.
And they formed their own society.
And they formed their own society and kept it pretty clean. Now, all of a sudden, we have an influx of a lot of youth that are homeless. Where do they come from? From homes that parents are kicking the children out at 18 or 19 or 20 years old. Or there's drug-related problems, alcohol-related problems, abuse problems, sexual problems, all kinds of mental problems, physical problems that the young are now inundating the streets of America.
All these are interesting considerations. Most interesting, however, is the possibility of organizing homeless people. And I'm wondering if... I would encourage you to get together with Bob and the Human Rights Organization, as you seem to already have done, and anybody else out there, too. If you're interested in working for an encampment that would actually raise public awareness of the situation, maybe even provide a survival area as, you know, the new rangers and police step up enforcement, unconstitutional enforcement of the city's sleep after 11, go to jail ordinance, then give a call. It's 423-4833 is a number off air to give a call to. That's the Huff line, 423-4833. And I'll pass on any information I get from you, phone numbers, email addresses, to James here, who maybe, unless you want to give out a number yourself, James, for people to give a call
423-4833.
But in case you want to give out your own number here for people to call, you might feel free to do that if you think you...
Well, the center has a phone call that can be called at the day center, and a message can be left for me there.
Okay.
If anybody has any questions or want to work on some of these issues, I would be willing to work with anyone that has some progressive ideas.
Well, the number there at the Homeless Service Center to get a hold of James would be 458-6020.
Leave a number and I'll get back to you on that.
What extension? There's a massive extension problem when you call
that
number.
That's the number. That is the phone number that can be called and a message can be left.
Well, the problem is there's a huge... It says what extension do you leave it at, and there's no... What extension do you suggest? I've tried calling that number. It puts you into this horrible matrix. I'll tell you what. I mean, I would say, you know, well, we're looking for the number, but while you... And also, we have, well, try the Huff number, 423-4833, or your number. Go ahead, Bob.
Human rights number, I'll be working with James, and that's 425-4467, and I'll get the message to him. Currently, he's got some writing he's doing. He's going to try to publish eventually, but so I'll be trying to help him out on some computer work.
What I'm going to do now, James, is I'm going to turn to some sort of related issues, and I encourage you both to stay in the studio because I'd like you to comment on this. But this, we're going to listen to some tape now, and I'm going to make a few, kind of bring up a few things. First, I want to point out that if people want to reach Representative Farr and ask him to kick down to cover the debt of the Homeless Service Center, you can contact Farr at 429-1976. 429-1976 is our U.S. Representative Farr. This is the same guy who voted to continue the funding of the war in Iraq with these bogus, half-assed, but not mandatory guidelines that Bush vetoed. And he has not indicated. I talked to Gall, actually a very useful aide at Farr's office. He didn't know whether Farr intends to vote for the next round of giveaways to the Iraq war or the bigger military budget this summer that will be coming up. But you can call Farr and tell him not to do that and to fund instead homeless services, 429-1976. You can also ask him to remove the, to include a don't attack Iran provision to the supplemental. And the first thing you'll be told by his office is, Representative Farr supports no attacking Iran. But what you don't know is that Nancy Pelosi removed that provision from the Iraqi supplemental bill, which passed the House. And so we don't have a chance. Instead, we have this slowly moving don't invade Iran thing that might reach the House sometime next year, as far as we know. So, I mean, this appropriation for Iraq is going to come right back to the floor very quickly. And this don't invade Iran provision has to be included. And Farr has to vote for it, even if Nancy Pelosi doesn't like it. And he has to speak up for it, too. That's my view. What I've got now, do you want to say something, James?
Well, what's wrong with a homeless paper?
Nothing.
Notifications about what's going on for the public to be notified. Articles that could be written by some of the homeless people and how they feel. Even if it's ridiculous or not, it doesn't matter. Whatever, if they get in the paper.
Well, I used to publish such a paper called the Street Shit Sheet. You can find it in the library.
But it's not here anymore. And there's many papers across the country in a lot of communities.
And there is a newspaper called Street Spirit, which you can write and you can distribute and sell here for $1 a piece. In fact, the new issue should be out soon.
Isn't that wonderful for advertising?
Actually, they got no advertising. They're American Friends Service Committee at this point. But, you know, they're funded by a grant, and they're a pretty good paper, except that they have some problems with their editor in some respects, but that's another story. I always have to go through this long disclaimer. But the fact is, they're generally a good paper, and they're on the cutting edge of trying to help homeless activism, provided you don't also associate with the wrong kind of political causes on the extreme right in the Israeli area, which is a completely bizarre thing. But anyway, I think the idea of a local homeless paper is a great idea, James, and I think that I would be happy to be supportive of that. In fact, I'd be happy to put out a paper myself. If people started to send me articles, I would probably start working on it. But I would love to see homeless people start working on their own paper and get it together like they did in Portland, Oregon with Street Roots.
Exactly.
Like they did in Washington with Real Change.
And like they have done in Grand Junction, Colorado. Like, I just came from Grand Junction over the winter.
Or Sacramento with Homeward.
And I worked in
Santa Monica with
Mission
Change.
Yeah, I worked in the Mission and lived there.
And you're going to start this, aren't you, James?
Well, I'm willing to put... My point is, for 5 years I've been out here traveling around to different homeless shelters, different gospel missions, different churches that help the homeless, just to investigate exactly what really is going on out here. Mm-hmm. And I've traveled from California, Arizona, Nevada, Colorado, Utah, and Kansas. And across the board, All of these cities are having some of the same problems. What are they doing to resolve them? The churches, basically, in the Midwestern states, have stepped up to the plate right now, and they pretty well help the homeless people.
A few of them.
In Colorado, I have to say that the homeless was not out in the cold during the winter.
Well, in every city that I've heard of, there's inadequate shelter.
That is true.
I don't think Denver, Colorado has adequate shelter for the homeless.
That is true.
It would be new
that
to me if it
true.
Were, you know.
But Denver is just like Fifth and San Pedro in Los Angeles.
Although in Los Angeles, at least the homeless are theoretically allowed to
camp
sleep
on the street.
Right, theoretically, of course. The police both violate that law, and they also use other laws.
I was there. I camped on Fifth and San Pedro for approximately 6 months to get
really?
Inundated
when was
into
this?
Those. This was in 2003.
So even back then, they weren't arresting you for doing that?
Oh, well, of course. They weren't arresting us. They were giving us tickets.
But they were giving
tickets.
And
tickets were turned into warrants.
Right.
And warrants then turned into felonies.
Right.
A misdemeanor now is a felony.
Well, actually, I don't think they can do that, but they can certainly keep it a misdemeanor and arrest you for it.
Well, they can. But yeah. Most of the times what happens if they get arrested again because the warrant has or the ticket has turned into a warrant.
It's
LA
a failure
has
to appear.
Said, okay, we'll take them to city jail. We'll put them right in front of the judge, and the judge will kick them out.
Right. And so it's a
time served.
A constant process of harassment. An endless
process
stream.
Of endless
the idea being to get you the fuck out of
recycling.
Town. Recycling. So I'm going to go now to another segment of the show. Please hang with me, James, if you'd like. And is there anything more you wanted to say before we go?
No, other than the fact that I think Sheila, the director of the food program, had a wonderful idea. Anybody that has a few extra bucks, send to the shelter for the purpose of serving food on the weekends.
You know, my response to that would be, you know, go join Food Not Bombs and help set up some other meals and or feed a homeless person yourself. You know, I don't like kicking money down to, you know, bureaucracies. But, I hear what you're saying, and frankly, you know, I respect the fact that you're looking for solutions to these problems and bringing them to the community here. You know?
Somebody right. comes up with them. I mean, I don't have any real solutions. All I have is I can see what the problems
like
are.
It sounds like
I'm living within the community of these people and serving them because my God tells me my responsibility as a Christian says that I must serve. I'm so
Fair
old
enough.
Now that I don't have a real purpose in life other than helping the homeless. And I see the mental targets, the physical targets that's been going on across the board. And that's why the homeless people are broke within 5 to 7 days, because they're targets.
Thank you, James. All right. If anybody has any thoughts, and I don't know how long James and Bob are going to stay, but they're invited to stay, give a call. Maybe you can catch them before they take off. 427-3772 is the number to call.
Can I move you in upstairs?
If this were my place, so who knows? I might be saying, no way, Jose.
You see how these executives work?
Exactly. That's the story. All right. Well, I'm actually going to play a replay a segment from Democracy Now! Earlier today. This is about Bratton, Chief Bratton's bum-busting, or actually just bullying and brutality, in the May 1st rally down in Los Angeles, which was to restore rights to immigrants across the country, many of whom are homeless, as you probably know, James. So let's hear this, and then we'll hear some more other stuff as well. Maybe even we might hear from you, too. 427-3772.
The Los Angeles Police Department is coming under increasing criticism for violently crushing a largely peaceful immigrant rights march on Tuesday. Police with riot guns fired 240 rounds, shot tear gas, and killed protesters and journalists gathered in MacArthur Park. At least 10 people were injured, including 7 journalists. Federal Sepik was broadcasting live for Spanish language television network Telemundo when police knocked over his monitors and lights and hit his staff with batons. Sepik told the Los Angeles Times a police officer grabbed one of his cameras and threw it more than 15 feet to the ground. He said police pointed a riot gun at his face, hit him with a baton, and forced him out of the park. Patricia Nazario of the public radio station KPCC was also injured. On Wednesday, Nazario described to listeners what happened to her.
The cop jammed me in my ribs with his billy club, and so I turned around, squared, looking at him. I had my press pass on. I had my mic flag in my hand, my notepad, and my pen. And I said, "Why did you hit me? I'm a reporter." And he said, "Move." And I said, "I am moving. Why did you hit me? I'm a reporter." And he hit me again harder that time, and I fell.
Others assaulted included four employees of KVEA-TV, Channel 52, and a reporter for the public radio station KPCC hit by a police baton. Christina Gonzalez, a reporter for the Fox affiliate KTTV, Channel 11, suffered a bruised shoulder after she was shoved to the ground. Her camera operator suffered a broken wrist. The incident was caught on tape. Police and riot gear moved into MacArthur Park after some protesters started throwing rocks and plastic bottles at officers. But this time, it was impossible for the news media to be impartial observers.
I am helping her move, God! She can't see me!
Move her back, or take her over the slider. You're under arrest.
This way!
It didn't stop with pushing and shoving. Police officers fired rubber bullets. Protesters say they had no warning that officers were moving in.
We are talking about an order to disperse, which I never heard. Neither did people being hit by rubber bullets. That man was standing next to a colleague's network live shot this.
A photographer was trying to capture all of the action when he was targeted by police. Knocked over, then kicked. The officer even grabs and throws his camera. As our crew tries to move to safety, a police officer hits camera person Patty Ballard.
Here is a perspective from a colleague at Univision. You see us on the right side of the screen. Patty goes down. I am trying to protect her, but they don't stop. Even though I'm telling them, we are trying to get to our truck a few feet away.
A report by Fox affiliate KTTV Channel 11. The LAPD says it gave orders to disperse, but several journalists and protesters have disputed the account. The order was made only in English, not even near the main crowd. LAPD Police Chief William Bratton admitted the actions taken by the police were inappropriate. He said, quote, "I was disturbed at what I saw." The LAPD has launched a pair of investigations. Several news groups say they're considering legal action. We go now to Los Angeles to two guests. Ernesto Arce is a correspondent for Pacifica radio station KPFK in Los Angeles. He was shot with a police rubber bullet at the May Day protest. Also on the line, Gerardo Gomez, counselor and homeless rights activist, who was shot twice at the protest. Ernesto Arce, let's begin with you. Where were you? What did you see?
Hi, good morning, Amy. I was at the southeast corner of the park, MacArthur Park, which I believe was at 7th and Alvarado. I was trying to get a sense of what was happening. I noticed that there was a lot of commotion at that end of the park. I noticed that a lot of people were running and fleeing. So I wanted to see what it was that was happening. I also wanted to, you know, get onto the Metro link to get home. But of course, I wasn't able to do that since there was a heavy police presence on Alvarado Street. It was then that I noticed that the police, and I guess it was two different kinds of cops. There was the regular cops, and then there was the SWAT team, who had come in very shielded attire. They also were holding what looked like rifles. They began to push people back from the very southeast corner of the park into the park. They were at first using batons, but I noticed that they began to shoot. I wasn't sure what type of, whether it was tear gas or whether they were actual real bullets or rubber pellets, but many people were getting hit. It was at that time that people began to just flee towards towards the north of the park. There was a lot of commotion. There was a lot of confusion. Hundreds of families were still there. Actually, at this end of the park, the main rally, which was attended by approximately 5,000 to 10,000 people, organized by the MEWAN, Multi-Ethnic Workers Coalition, was still going on at this time. It hadn't been broken up. So there were still several hundred families, even on the south end of this, south side of this park. A lot of people were running, screaming. There were families. There were children. There's a large transient population that lives at MacArthur Park, a lot of homeless individuals, handicapped individuals, and, of course, streetcar vendors that, sell different fares, whether ice cream or hot dogs, and they were unable to get out on time, and the police were relentless. They were merciless. They would hit anyone in their path. They would shoot at anyone. Actually, a lot of people were shot on the back, including myself. It was total chaos. And again, another example of Los Angeles Police Department brutality.
Ernesto, from what you were able to tell, what touched off this disproportionate response, given the fact that, for instance, last year, 500,000 people marched in Los Angeles in the biggest protest in that state's history, and now with this much smaller crowd, the police reacted in this way?
Well, it seems like they were trying to clear Alvarado Street for ongoing traffic, and there was a gathering, a large gathering, a circle of people that were gathered around Aztec Danzantes, or pre-Columbian Mexican dancers, and they were holding a ceremony, and a police on motorcade decided to forcibly break that up, and they drove their motorcycles through this crowd. They were followed by police on bike and followed by more police on foot. The police on bike and the police on foot forcibly removed the people. I think there was some resistance because I think the Aztec dancers weren't able to pick up their ceremonial processions and some of the things that they were that they had with them, drums, etc. And they weren't able to move quickly enough. I know several people were pushed over onto the ground by the police, and they weren't able to make it, onto the sidewalk as the police were demanding. So I think there was definitely that original skirmish, which happened approximately 30 minutes after the march concluded or arrived at MacArthur Park at approximately 5:30.
In addition to Ernesto Arce, correspondent with KPFK, Pacifica radio station in Los Angeles, who himself was shot with a rubber bullet, we're joined by Gerardo Gomez, a counselor and homeless rights activist in Los Angeles, shot twice with rubber bullets by the LAPD. Gerardo, describe exactly what happened to you, where you were, what point of the protest, and how you got shot.
I was there around about 5:40 on close to the corner of 7th and Alvarado. And I was just a spectator, just on the sidewalk on the park. When about maybe 15 minutes later, I don't know, where we see cops like pushing the people out of the park and throwing tear gases and rubber bullets. And the first time I got shot, I would say I was probably maybe 400 feet away, and I got hit. And then I just started panicking and started running. I went to their side of the park, which was maybe on the it's probably the east side of 7th and Alvarado, like on the soccer side. That's when those are the images that's been showing on TV, where like it's on the soccer field and the cops just started like just harassing the people and not giving any orders and then shooting at people. The second time that I got shot, I was very close to the Spanish cameraman who got hit with the bullet, and because he wasn't able to get up, he got hit with batons. So the second time I got hit, I was like 50 feet away, and I rolled down, and I was in pain, but if I didn't get up on time, I was going to get hit again. And I want to remind you that what they did yesterday, it's totally inappropriate, and I know that they've been mentioning reports that there was like, they're trying to blame it on these young anarchists. But in reality, the cops got caught, and the fact that they got caught and that it's in the videos, they're trying to find someone to blame it for. So it's easy for them to say, oh, let's blame it on young anarchists, and that's not right. They didn't give no warnings. They didn't give nothing. And with the people in LA, we're asking the resignation of Chief Braddon, because what he's been doing is the same thing that he did in New York with the Million Youth March on September 5th, 1998. And it was the exact same scenario. And we saw what he did with the homeless people in Times Square. That's exactly what he's doing here in Skid Row, trying to push the homeless people away. And then with his police brutality, the Susi Pena case, the Devin Brown case, all these actions are inappropriate. And for him to get another 5-year term, that's inappropriate. But we're not only just asking for the resignation of Chief Braddon, but we're asking for the city of LA to change the way the system works, the policing system works. and we're asking for a different approach. In the state of Guerrero, what they do, the cops, it's the community who runs the cops. They realize that the police system is so corrupt, so it's a voluntary program. So it's the community themselves, they're controlling their own like neighborhood. And when a family goes out to patrol the streets, the community helps the family by providing them with beans and rice. And that's what we're trying to let the city of LA know, that we're not just asking for the resignation of Chief Batten, but we're asking for them to change the policing system. Because what they did on May Day, they instigated fear on us, but what they did, they reassured to us that we cannot trust the police.
Ernesto Arce, let me ask you a question. The police commissioner, Bratton, formerly here in New York, the police commissioner. The mayor, Villaraigosa, he was in El Salvador during the May Day protests. Where is he now and what has he said?
From what I heard, the mayor was on a 7 or 8 day tour of Latin America, actually just two countries, Mexico and El Salvador. He's meeting with Mexican President Felipe Calderon, as well as Salvadoran President Tony Saca. And they're mostly there to mention, or mostly there to talk about business deals, as well as what they call the transnational gang threat, which is essentially Las Maras, or the gangs that have crossed from one nation to another. His original response was that he thought it was unfortunate, and he's calling for a full, transparent investigation. But he has completely supported Chief Bratton in the past, and he did offer words of encouragement. And he said that everything was being done to investigate the situation, and that he would be returning pretty soon.
And Ernesto, for those folks who are not familiar with Los Angeles, could you talk about the importance of MacArthur Park? This has been the site in over decades of many protests in the Latino community, hasn't it?
That's right. It's actually named after General MacArthur, who I suppose was a war hero during the Korean War. It's similar to New York Central Park. It's probably the largest park in Los Angeles County. Or rather within Los Angeles city limits. Again, I'm not exactly sure what the size is, but it's a really large park. It's in the Westlake neighborhood, which has since maybe the late or mid-80s has been home to predominantly Central American and Latino immigrants. It's in a very impoverished and, neglected, underserved neighborhood. And there has been many protests at MacArthur Park. I know some of the Filipino World War II veterans held protests there every year. Of course, many immigrant rights protests are held there at MacArthur Park. Last year, one of the two main rallies on May Day was organized there at MacArthur Park. It's a site for a lot of different activities.
Ernesto, we only have a second, but what about those who want to talk about what happened to them, but this was an immigrants' rights protest, afraid perhaps of being identified, of being targeted for being undocumented?
Yeah, and I think that's the problem. I think we held a special program here in Los Angeles yesterday. And
5 seconds.
That were, they were terrified to move forward and to actually, file reports against the police.
Ernesto Arce, I want to thank you very much for being with us, as well as Gerardo Gomez. Our website is democracynow.org. You can go there for transcript, audio, and video podcast. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
And that was a segment from today's Democracy Now!, which you can download at www.democracynow.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides, the final half hour. Calling number here in case you want to reach me is 427-3772 if you have any comments. I note that in that particular segment, it's interesting that they do quote people that they call homeless activists and advocates. And, of course, the downtown Skid Row area has become a very significant area in terms of police abuse because Bratton, as is mentioned before, has been using the Giuliani Bloom strategy, the New York mayors, who essentially drive the homeless out of town, gentrify the area, criminalize being in public spaces if you look homeless. And they're doing the same thing in Los Angeles. And, of course, the courts have said you can't do that if you're sleeping because there's no legal place for people to sleep in the Jones decision. They are apparently both ignoring the Jones decision and also using all kinds of other pretexts, ranging from dropping a cigarette butt on the sidewalk to are you on parole, intimidating people into giving information and asking them questions, demand ID checks, all kinds of peripheral pretextual offenses, you know, open container, I would imagine, other things of that sort. That's what I learned when I talked to activists with L.A. Can, and I'm still hoping to get an interview with L.A. Can. A little music, and I'll be back with an interview. I think our next interview up is with Camp Quixote's Matt from the Poor People's Union, who came down here about a month and a half ago and who I reached this afternoon by phone. Stay tuned.
Six in the morning, my room at the Cecil. 94.50 a week stretches me out a little. Six in the morning, it's dope and magnum. Borrow me $2 so I can get to work again. I'm having a party tonight. I'm having a party tonight. I'm having a party tonight, party by myself. Lunch wagon left, I stayed at my desk, I said I wasn't hungry. Nobody questioned me. I bought 3 40-ounce magnums and the cigarettes I craved all day. And I visit my dope man at 6th and Broadway. I'm having a party tonight. I'm having a party tonight. I'm having a party tonight. Party by myself. Door, the word could get around. I got beer and cigarettes. I got a 9th floor view of Main Street and a working TV set. 6 in the evening in my room at the Cecil. Captain Kirk don't care about my breath or about my bloodshot eyes. My beer is my friend and my rock is my friend. And my friends are why I'm getting up tomorrow again. I'm having a party tonight. I'm having a party tonight. I'm having a party tonight. Party by myself. Oh, party by myself. Oh, party by myself.
And that was Dan Byrne, Party by Myself. And the previous segment from Democracy Now! Was about a police riot against the protest on the to change the vicious immigration laws that we're currently saddled with in this country. And indeed, homeless activists formed a coalition with those fighting to change those laws, mainly, I think, in part because a lot of the immigrants are homeless, and there's really a shared condition. You know, the phrase, ningún humano es ilegal, no human is homeless. I mean, no human is illegal, is lots of humans are homeless, but nobody is illegal in truth, is really a great slogan and a great truth. So here's a little, here's an interview that I did this afternoon. I introduce it, and we'll play it, and because I think this will be maybe it for Free Radio's, for my show tonight. And after that, of course, Uncle Dennis will come humming your way with a little of this and a little of that, and a lot of From the Cream to the Dregs. So stay tuned.
We're on the line to Matt, who's with Bread and Roses and the Poor People's Union up in Olympia, Washington, and is a notorious hanger-outer and organizer at Camp Quixote. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. So, what's your last name? I got part it last time, but give it to me again.
Oh, it's Kellegrew.
Kellegrew.
Kellegrew, yeah.
So Matt, I know that a roving hit team of PPU folks came down here about a month ago, kind of surveying the scene and hoping to line up members. I think it lined up me.
Yeah.
Not sure who else got lined up.
Well, you know, it's a central project.
Indeed. But you, of course, are working with Camp Quixote, which was a protest encampment and also a survival encampment, as I understand it, that began in protest against the anti-homeless laws passed by Olympia about, what, no sitting down on the sidewalk?
Yeah. They were called the pedestrian interference ordinances, and it prohibits sitting, standing, lying down, asking for money, or holding a sign within 6 feet of a building, which if you've been in downtown Olympia before, within 6 feet of a building puts you immediately outside the overhang, and in the Pacific Northwest, you know, it rains all the time, so it's basically legal to sit or lay down in the rain, but not where it's dry.
Well, that seems
a certain death for a lot of people in the cold season.
A way of cleaning up the homeless, so to speak.
Yeah, so
cold showers. So has that ordinance been enforced in the last couple months?
Due to what we believe to be like a pretty substantial resistance to the ordinance, the police haven't been enforcing it. They've been doing what they're calling an unofficial, although the ordinance is enforceable and on the books, and this is an official and mandated thing, the police have been doing an informational period where they're simply reminding people. We're expecting that when more people start coming out because of the warm weather in the summertime, more people begin coming downtown, that they're really going to begin to enforce it.
And has there been much resistance developing? I know the Poor People's Union kind of originally developed around resistance to this particular law. Is that right?
Well, the Poor People's Union actually developed like before the ordinance, but the ordinance was sort of the big flashpoint for a lot of mobilization. The there's sort of formal resistance and informal resistance to it. I mean, there's pretty much just an outright disregard of the law in general. Like, I mean, people, you know, either folks who are routinely on the street or even just, you know, average Joe pedestrians, like, pretty much don't abide by the law to begin with. I mean, it's a pretty ridiculous law that says, you know, you can't smoke, like California, you know, you can't smoke inside a building in Washington. So, you know, many people who are on their breaks from work, patrons from restaurants or bars and stuff like that, I mean, nobody really pays much attention to it. Of course, it's a targeted law, so we don't expect the police to be enforcing it on downtown patrons. We expect the police to be enforcing it on, you know, folks who are on the street.
Has it been enforced against homeless people at all?
It hasn't, like, we haven't gotten any reports yet of anybody being charged. We have gotten numerous reports of the police being like, in a matter of time, we're going to start taking you for this. You know, I think what happened was prior to the law even being voted in by the city council, the police had already begun arresting people for it. And so most of the charges from, you know, based around the pedestrian interference ordinance happened before the pedestrian interference ordinance was even legally recognized. And so because of sort of a lot of exposure that we did about that, as well as like sort of, you know, a larger community dialogue which sort of developed around it, the police have scaled back quite a bit. I think they're waiting until the issue kind of dies down, which hopefully we won't let it. But they're sort of waiting until the issue dies down so that they can do their dirty work kind of in secret without too much public interference.
Now, one of the consequences of this was the development of Camp Quixote downtown, which was a homeless-run encampment that boasted about, what, 30 or 40 people at its height?
At the peak, I think we actually had about 55. Right now, there's 30 permanent residents. Not permanent, but 30 residents at the camp. And the number 30 was mandated by the church, which is hosting the site right now. The Unitarian Universalist Church in Olympia is hosting the camp until May 19th, and then the camp is moving.
Do you know where it's going?
Today, there's been some developments that I don't think I'm at liberty to, like, for it because it's sort of unconfirmed, but we're pretty sure it's going to have a second home. If it doesn't, if something falls through, we've prepared and we're very willing to either move to a separate downtown location or move out into the woods, but the camp will stay together. Like, the camp is not going to break up.
I know that the Dignity Village, I guess, moved from place to place in Portland, Oregon in 2001 when it began as a consequence of organizing by Street Roots activists in the homeless newspaper there in the wake of the Wix decision that threw out the anti-homeless sleeping ban. Are you, is this Camp Quixote having any implications for other homeless people who are sleeping outside? Are they, you know, forming their own encampments or standing up more strongly for their rights, or are they hiding more, you know, thoroughly? What's going on?
Yeah, it's been pretty empowering for folks. The number of people who have either come through the camp or have been asked to leave the camp, one of the things that we've all been kind of surprised about is the sort of level of solidarity that goes on, because people in the camp have some pretty strict rules about drinking and drug use. And although we haven't had any problems with really theft or violence too much, the drinking and drug use rule for certain people who suffer from addiction can be a really difficult one. And so some people have violated that rule, been asked to leave, and it's been... they've gone out into the woods and begun their own camps, sort of in solidarity with Camp Quixote. There's been no hard feelings. Like, people have, you know, understood that, like, that's what's up. And so there's sort of, like, camps developing on the periphery of the official camp, not physically, but, I mean, like, sort of, you know, ideologically on the periphery of the camp, like, sort of in a continuance of the Camp Quixote-style solidarity, which is kind of awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, people, you know, the camp's been pretty good, I'd say.
Are those camps being busted? And if so, is there solidarity? Are Camp Quixote activists showing up there to support the campers?
Yeah. I mean, the Poor People's Union does, or at least provides outlets for people to request campsite escorts if they're concerned about their safety going to and from their camps. We do. We help provide trash pickups and laundry services to people who request them. Because we don't want to start doing forays out into the woods and violating people's privacy or threatening their secrecy, we sort of have people come to us in order to receive those services. And they're not, it's not like a social service setup. It's more like, you know, a couple of union volunteers just help other folks in the union. So it's very informal, but it happens.
Was there much action around May 1st and the the demonstrations against the attacks on immigrants through the institutional hate crime laws against immigrants that we now have nationwide?
Yeah, actually, the Poor People's Union and the Olympia Movement for Justice and Peace, the OMJP, as well as immigration rights group in Shelton, whose acronym I forget, organized a... sorry, I just got yelled at for putting my feet on the desk. We organized a rally in March in downtown Olympia. It's... I think, you know, we had about 300 people for a town our size. It's pretty well attended for a sort of a rainy Tuesday afternoon, which was good. I mean, and it was, you know, in solidarity with the marches in Los Angeles and in Seattle. You know, Seattle had 35,000 people. Los Angeles had 50,000 people. It's kind of a, so it was a, you know, it was a continuation.
Any Spanish-speaking people in Camp Quixote or the people?
Yeah, there are a number of Spanish-speaking people in Camp Quixote.
And the Poor People's Union?
As well as the Poor People's Union, yeah.
How big is the Poor People's Union now?
The Poor People's Union has 110 registered members, and we have about 30 to 40 meeting-attending members.
And how often do you hold meetings?
Once a week.
And what came out of the last meeting? Give me all the highlights.
Well, actually, we didn't have a last meeting. Our last meeting happened during the annual procession of the species, so we postponed it until this week. But mostly what's happening is, like, we're working on forming a worker-owned labor cooperative to compete with Labor Ready, which will be run by union labor. It won't compete with other union jobs. We're trying to form alliances with the longshoremen, the steelworkers, the SEIU, other unions, so that our labor contracting doesn't come into conflict with their union work. And, you know, it'd be, you know, I don't know if you know about Labor Ready's policies. I'm sure you probably do. Maybe your listeners don't. Like,
tell us.
You know, they'll charge an employer $21 an hour and then pay the worker $7.35 and keep the rest of the money. In a worker-owned cooperative, people would be able to keep like 80 to 90% of their wage, and then the amount of their wage that gets clipped off, every worker has democratic control over it. And so it would recycle back into the project to do things like buy vans. vans and tools and eventually health insurance, which is our 360-day, five-day plan is to by next year be able to provide health insurance for people.
Well, I know Labor Ready here in Santa Cruz, I believe, provides workers who go and destroy homeless campsites, tear up tents,
dumpster
property and so forth. I'm not sure what they do up in Olympia. How's the anti-war movement going up there, and has there been much connection with homeless civil rights movement? We have a thing called here the vigil against two wars, the war in Iraq and the war on the poor in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, it's coming around. You know, both wars are still raging. So I mean, you know, we haven't finished our job yet. But the peace community up here is sort of coming around to coming full circle to the conclusions that poverty, classism, and capitalism in general, are not consequences of the war, but in fact causes of the war. And so, you know, our two movement, I think within the Poor People's Union and specifically amongst the poor community in Olympia, I mean, it's very, very clear to see where money goes, you know, when you rely on social services to watch those services be cut and then read every day in the paper about war escalations and stuff like that. Those connections are made really early on by a lot of people who are primarily veterans, I should add.
Many vets involved with the Camp Quixote?
Yeah, quite a few. I'd say there's eight vets that are living at the camp right now. Mm-hmm. Out of the 30 that are there.
Any connections with other encampments like the Arcata People's Project, which you may have heard about?
Yeah, we just read about that the other day, actually. Mm-hmm. It's been kind of hectic, so keeping up on the news about stuff like this has been sort of a battle. But I mean, there's been talk about trying to go down to Arcata to help people out or try to do some sort of solidarity action, but our resources are stretched a little thin. We just had this meeting action going on, and the camp is preparing to move in 2 weeks, and so a lot of our energy right now is focused on securing the second location and beginning to pack up and get ready to go.
Any support from Seattle's Tent City 4 or Dignity Village recently?
Oh, yeah. Dignity Village has been very, really, really supportive, especially when it comes to paperwork, which is one of the hardest things about it all. They've got extensive documentation on all of the legal processes that they've had to go through in order to make their Tent City work. All of the sort of the hurdles, both city and state, federal, and so they've got this extensive paperwork collection where if we ever have a question about this document or that document or city zoning or all the weird problems that we never thought about that show up, they've been tremendous in their help with those resources.
Any support from the American
down?
Sorry.
To visit, and we've gone up there to visit, and sort of shared ideas about things. We don't share it direct. Tent City 4 is not controlled by the people who camp there. It's controlled by the churches that host the site. And so there's sort of a divergence between our two camps about how a camp, can operate a democratic procedure. But, there's, of course, a lot of solidarity between the people in different camps, So, mm-hmm. Even though we take different paths on it, we're still very much connected.
How about the ACLU and the National Lawyers Guild? Are you getting any legal support from any groups?
We're getting legal support from an informal. Luckily, very, very, very luckily, we haven't needed a tremendous amount of legal support yet. We haven't been charged with any crimes. We haven't, had to go to court over anything yet. But we're getting legal counsel from a local civil rights attorney, as well as a number of retired attorneys turned activists, is what I should say.
Mm-hmm. Now, have the police continued to focus their attacks on dispersing other homeless encampments or using other anti-homeless laws to remove homeless people from public spaces, even while this is going on?
Always. A number of, it's always these unconfirmed things, and I'm sure the same thing goes on in Santa Cruz, but it's, tents wind up getting slashed up, tents get burned, campsites get destroyed. It's sort of Olympia is a small town. The likelihood that this was a citizen, or a group of citizens, rogue civilians going out into the woods and destroying homeless camps without being seen, is pretty slim, especially given how well hidden these camps are and how much energy the police spend finding out where they are. It seems most likely, just in terms of logical reasoning, that it was either the police or somebody associated with the police. And of course, it's unfounded. We don't have any videotape of police slashing up tents, but it's a pretty well understood amongst people that camp out in the woods, and we hear reports of it all the time. We've actually been trying to document them about tents and camps being destroyed. Hasn't been a lot of physical violence, but it has happened in the past where police have attacked people.
When I spoke to Poor People's Union folks who came down Maybe you were one of them, I'm not sure. But there was not much knowledge of the Jones decision, or apparently concern about police arresting people for sleeping at night, because apparently police don't use or have a sleeping ban in Olympia that goes after homeless people who sleep in their vehicles or in public places?
Actually, they do, but it's the enforcement on it is not as extreme as it is in other places.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly, instead of a sleeping ban, what they use is property and trespassing laws.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more likely that you're going to get a ticket for criminal trespass than it is for you to get a ticket actually for sleeping, even if you're sleeping. I mean, the ticket is more written for where you're sleeping and less about, like, the fact that...
I mean, even in public spaces?
Even in public spaces, yeah. Mm-hmm. And especially in the escalation up to the pedestrian interference ordinance, like, in the 2 weeks before it passed to the council, there was, like, a rash of, I think, like, 12 arrests for criminal trespass on public property.
And have attorneys been looking at the use of the Jones decision to preclude this kind of arrest and to actually seek some sort of restitution for the people arrested, given the fact that the Ninth Federal Circuit Court of Appeals found that such arrests were a violation of the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment?
Yeah, you know, they have been looking into that, and I've talked to the civil rights attorney in our town who we were conferring with about that before, but I mean, like, I'm not on the legal subcommittee, so I can't really talk about what the legal subcommittee is doing, although I do know that, like, as much energy is being put into finding legal ways to both overturn the pedestrian interference ordinance as well as to protect people from that type of repression. So, I mean, like, it's you know, it's for sure being looked into as thoroughly as possible. But again, you know, we're sort of, like, we're relying on people's spare time. We're relying on people's donations and sort of generosity. And
that's going to have to be it for this interview with Matt from Olympia. I'll be concluding with the interview, maybe playing a little bit to kind of orient you on Sunday. If you want to come on back, you few loyal listeners, or perhaps you many silent listeners out there, stay tuned now for the From the Cream to the Dregs. Uncle Dennis is unloading a shitload of CDs here. It looks like he's got quite a selection, and who knows what's coming up. He knows what's coming up, perhaps. And
I have no idea.
He claims to have no idea, but you know how Dennis is. He has his own plans. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I'll be back at 9:30, maybe even earlier, because I sneak into Levitt's The Wake-Up Call, which starts at 7:30, and play old tapes. So for those of you who haven't had enough of me yet, well, check
who
me out.
Who is that?
Dennis among them, of course. I can hear. Check me out on Sunday morning. In the meantime, 423-4833 is the number to call. That's the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides.
This is the boogie. From Savoy Brown, the boogie. Yeah.
out one night, and
police officers pull it down. We regard as Savoy Brown's part to play a progressive funk music group music today. Now, we want you to listen to with open eyes, open ears, and open minds to this particular part of the song, because Savoy Brown will be progressing new fields of music and trying to bring them in to that particular bag. Now, people have always thought of us as a blues and a boogie band. But we want you to kind of listen to what's going on and think the next part of the song, because this is a small sample of what may well happen in the future, the field of progression in which we are going. Now, we're going to ask our lead guitarist, Mr. Grimson, to lead this particular part of the song from off for you. And once you dig it with complete understanding, because this may well be a bag. Which, who knows, we may go.